You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the tree right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Atlas knows what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Where the party they gonna have? Out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And, folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everybody. Marco Bill here. How's everybody doing? First of all, I'd like to thank our listeners and our family members out here, our Bigfoot family members, for emails and for text messages and phone calls, and a lot of the well-wishers out there that have called to tell people, the sick people out there that they hope they're feeling better. We do have quite a few people out there that have taken ill, including me. I'm not that ill, but there's a lot of other people out there that are really more critical than I am. And so we'd like to send out a good well wish and a prayer for everybody out there that's in, that needs a little help. But anyway, also I'd like to thank some of our listeners for some of their inputs. Some of them have referred me to various other websites and other stuff that's going on, and some of them are quite interesting. But it's that's what it's all about, I guess. We're all out here trying to figure out how much more information we can get on these creatures. And hopefully, working together, we can do that. Well, tonight we have a full lineup of guests here. And so what I'd like to do, rather than I'd like to forego a lot of chatter that I usually do, and go right into talking to some of our guests. Now, we had a gentleman by the name of Steve from New York here last week. He's on again this week, and he's had some activity taking place in his area again. Plus, he's had quite a few experiences. Let's go out there to New York and talk to our friend Steve. Steve, how are you tonight?
Good, Bill. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Yeah, I had an interesting week this week, Saturday night / Sunday morning. Well, first of all, let me just say that my neighbors had a little party, like a barbecue, earlier that evening. And, you know, I stepped out on my porch at about 7:30, and I smelled the food, and I was like, wow, that really smells good. I head up to bed about 11 o'clock, and about 3:30 in the morning, I heard my neighbor's garbage can make a big bang, and it went on the floor. And I jumped up, and I went to the window, and I took a look, and I saw something walking on 2 feet, silhouette of something walking on 2 feet. I rolled the window up, looked out. I didn't see any eye shine or anything, but heard the footsteps going into the woods, and it was walking on 2 feet, and you could hear the branches breaking, and my neighbor woke up. The sensor light went off, but at that point it was already out of view for me to see it. And my neighbor walked out of his on his porch and took a look. Of course, I didn't say anything to him, but, you know, it was just another incident, again, of the many that I've had throughout the years with these creatures.
That's pretty neat. Well, you know what, Steve? Can you, let's dig back a little further. Tell us about some more of your experiences that you've had, experiences you've had.
Well, you know what? Less than a mile from my house, on one occasion, I was driving home, and I saw something on the side of the road that was about 5 foot tall. What it was a juvenile Sasquatch. About 5 foot tall, okay? And it had the brown fur, you know, the classic brown fur of a Sasquatch, and it was really small. And it was squatted down, and it saw me, and it just took like 2 steps and darted off in the woods. But I had a pretty clear view of it. I would say it was about 3 seconds. Now, this area that I'm talking about where the road is right, exactly right where I live, just got to go through the woods over there. And it's, you know, these woods, there's a couple of roads that lead to a mountain that, like I said to you the other day, that goes along the Appalachian Trail over there. And, you know, they're there. And I think, you know, like I said to you last week, and I believe I have a family of at least 16 living on there. You know, by my where I live. And, you know, I'll tell you another one, too. This was one that was a female, actually. I had just gotten home, and I had two other people with me in the car as well. And we're getting out of the car, you know, and I didn't really notice anything right away. But the person I was with me goes, oh, my God, it's Bigfoot, look. And I look over. And sure enough, it was a Bigfoot, and it was a female. And, you know, you could see the breast that were, you know, you could see that it was a female. And she was about six and a half feet tall. And, you know, she had the brown hair. And she just, like, hightailed out of there. And she went, you know, like I got in my car to go look for her, and I didn't see her. You know what I mean? After that.
Yeah.
And that was one time. I'll tell you another story I think I told you guys last week. But also when I got home. Now, what I do when I go home is, there's a park right by my house. I take a lap around with the lights on. And like I tell you, I'm always in the woods. You know what I mean? I'm always doing calls, you know, depending on how I'm feeling. And I'm doing wood knocks and everything else. And I was out there that day, okay? Now, this creature, and I was with someone in the car that day, too. This creature came up, again, hid behind the pine bush over there, and let out this tremendous roar that, you know, a Sasquatch makes. We all know the roars that Sasquatches make. If you heard it, but if you hear it, it's one thing to hear a recording, but it's another thing when this creature is doing it towards you and it's threatening you. You know, he was telling me this is his territory. And you know what? We went running in the house, and that day I didn't bother looking, but you know, like go looking with the car to see where it was. But I saw it, and this was a male, and this one was about 8 feet tall, and again with the brown fur, so on and so forth. I only saw it for about 3 seconds. But I saw it, and it was definitely a Sasquatch. Now, like I was telling you last week, the road right there where there's a baseball field is, I believe, where they go all the time. They hide behind the trees. They wait to grab the deer. But I also believe they like going there because I think they eat the pine needles, I guess. I guess they like eating them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things, I'll tell you, you know, it really fascinates me, you know, with these creatures because they're so smart, you know what I mean? I think the only reason why anyone ever sees it, it's really that we see them is probably by mistake more than anything else. But I think what does these creatures in is their curiosity. They're very, very
mm-hmm.
curious.
Oh, sure.
They love, you know, they want to see. They want to see what's going on, you know what I mean? Like, they're very curious about us because, you know, we have more information about them than they do about us. And, you know, the thing is...
Yeah, think about it, Steve. When we're tramping around the woods, okay, the human smell, any kind of smell, I mean, it's pretty prevalent. And so, I mean, not just the creature, but all animals can smell us as we're going through there, depending upon which way the wind's blowing, right? And that's why a lot of hunters, you know, a lot of times when you're hunting and stuff, you go, you know, to where you're going against the wind so that you're coming up on the prey or you're whatever you're hunting, and they can't smell you because the wind's going toward your face.
Right.
You know, and so it's a... I'm these things obviously know where you're at all the time you're in there, and they just watch us and want to see what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bill, and I was in there one time and I was doing wood knocks, and that time in particular, that was the time in particular where a big log was thrown at me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That night when I went home, it was bad up there through a log. When I went home that night on the side of the house, and I had the window open in my room, I heard three wood knocks on the side of my house, okay? And this is within walking distance of my house where I was. I was about less than a half a mile away. That's all it is,
sure.
Less than a half a mile away. And I heard the wood knocks, and you know what? That really said to myself, man, these guys, they know. They're very smart. They can pick up on your scent, like you said. They smell from a long way away. And they know what's going on. I got to tell you another great story, too. This is probably right about, I would say, maybe early June of last year. I was home one night. I was watching a baseball game. And I had the window open. And all of a sudden, I heard the branch break, you know. And I said, well, you know what? I got to get up. I close the lights in the room. I get up. And I'm hearing the tussling going on in the woods, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, I'm looking down, and I see the silhouette of a creature. That's about 8.5-9 feet tall, and it looks right up at me, and I see his eyes. That's the only time I've ever seen Sasquatch's eyes glowing in the dark at night. Because this was like around, I would say, about 10:30 at night.
Sure.
And it's looking at me, and his eyes are the color were yellowish green, and he's
mm-hmm.
sitting there, and it's looking at me, and it was looking at me for a couple of minutes, and it just turned around and walked away and went back into the woods. And that was, you know, that was an incredible thing. I wish there was some way I could have put a light on him or something, but I didn't want to piss it off any more than it already was with me, with all the stuff that's going on. And, you know, they're definitely, they live where I am. They're around. They know who I am. They know where I live. And I don't think they're particularly casting me too much.
Well, in 2008, about July of 2008, we had a woman had gotten divorced and moved with her daughter up in the Adirondacks. Had a little, like a farm. Not a real big farm, but a little farm, you know what I'm talking about? You know, a few pigs and some chickens and some, you know, nothing big, just a small little farm you can subsist on. And, you know, she was surviving on her alimony and whatever else. You know, she had not much money. And, anyway, she first made a report to us, and they were coming down to her pig trough and eating the slop out of the pig trough, you know, eating food out of the pig trough where the pigs were eating, and she seen them, and so we sent a couple of people up there to take a look and kind of investigate it and everything. And while they were there, the six-year-old had a little soccer, well, it's not a soccer ball, but you know those little, it looks like, it's not a soccer ball, it's a rubber, you know, a little rubber ball.
Right.
The kids get, you know, they bounce them around, and they're made out of rubber. Soccer ball's kind of leathery and all that. It's just kind of rubbery, right?
Right.
And it was red. And she had been playing with it in the yard. And they were all sitting there talking, and the researchers were taking information from the lady and sitting down outside at a little, like a picnic table or a little table, talking. And, of course, bordering alongside her little spread was the woods began, right, going up. And there was some big, tall trees, kind of all, really heavy brush, things like that were in there. And anyway, they heard some noises back. While they were talking, they heard noises back in the brushy area there, and where the thick trees were. So they stopped talking, and they started looking over there what was going on, and of course they couldn't see anything. And the little girl threw the ball, and the ball went into the woods. And about 2 seconds later, the ball came right back.
Yep, I believe it.
So, yeah, that kind of impressed them. So then, they started looking around real close around the area, and found that there were some caves near the area there. And in the caves, we found hair samples.
Wow.
And that's where they were habitating. And other things we found, the tree twists, layers, yeah, things like that. And all these things were, so it started getting pretty interesting. Anyway, we had her on the show for the third week. And she had to go outside of her house because the cell phone coverage there was real weak. And when she got on the back side of her porch, she had better coverage, right?
Right.
And so she was sitting out on the back porch, and that looks down into where her big pen is. And we had her on the show, and she was telling, she was telling her experiences, what they had and what they found and what the team found when they were there and going through all that. And all of a sudden, she just started crying and started just kind of whimpering, right?
Right.
And I was wondering, what the heck is going on? And I thought, maybe we said something that hurt her feelings or something like that. And then she said, there's two creatures down by the pig pen right now, and I'm so scared I can't move.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Let me tell you,
So
I know the feeling.
So that was right on while we were on air on the show. It was really, it was pretty neat. So, but there are around, there are right around where you're at, there is where all this took place.
Yes.
And,
I got to tell you two more stories, too, if I have enough
time.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I don't want to keep you. Another encounter I had was what I believe is the mating season for them, which probably starts right about now, probably middle of May, and it probably goes into probably either June, July, or whatever. My neighbor has a little shed down the house. Don't ask me why. For whatever reason, I've heard wood knocks off that shed. They seem to love that shed. I don't know what it is about it. And I was hearing wood knocks, and it wasn't late. This was it was like 7 o'clock at night. It was on a Saturday night. And I look out and I see a Sasquatch there doing a wood knock, does a call, and then on the side of the road over there, right by where my house is, there's a female one, and she does a vocalization back to him. And the next thing you know, they both go wandering off. The other one, the woman, the female one, darting down. The other one went wandering off into the woods. I guess they met up with each other or whatever. And that was another incredible experience. And then this is something that's going to fascinate you. I know you've heard these stories in the past. One Sunday morning, I got up very early. It was about 5:30 in the morning. And, it was probably early spring or whatever. And I opened the window. I usually do that to hear if I hear the footsteps or anything. And there was a blue jay and a cardinal out in the yard, and they were whistling. Let me tell you, I heard something whistling coming from the woods, and it sounded like a child's voice, And it was mimicking the birds, okay? And it did it for a few minutes, and it started making noises that almost sounded human, but they weren't. And then all of a sudden, it did that big old growl that like the Sasquatch to do. Like mm-hmm. just the way the birds were identifying themselves, it did the call. And I believe it was a juvenile Sasquatch that was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it, I just heard it, but it was incredible.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty neat when they do that.
It sure is.
Well, gosh. Steve, I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're going to stick around till the end, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
And some other people got some questions for you, I'm sure.
Sure.
I want to thank you again for keeping in touch and coming on the show and sharing with us. I'm going to mute you out for now. We're going to go to commercial, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Riley from Idaho. Take care.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Steve from New York. We're going to go here to a little commercial. We'll be right back.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage, available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. And now let's go out here to Idaho and talk to our good friend Riley. Riley, how are you tonight?
Doing good. How are you?
Super.
Good. Well, Riley, thanks for having me out.
Oh, well, thank you for coming on and sharing with us, Riley. Tell us, now you've had an encounter experience. Once you tell, now I did get your picture, and I got to download this stupid thing out of my thing here, but once I get it downloaded, I'll be able to take a look at it closely, but it looked pretty good. Just tell us what took place, how it happened, and, you know, all that.
Okay, so it started out on a Sunday. I went out bear hunting, and I was way back in the mountains, about 5 or 10 miles, and out in the middle of nowhere, so nobody was around or anything. And I see this big black creature walking on four legs behind a bush. And so I thought it was a bear. And as it started walking out a little more, it started kind of coming up on two legs. And I noticed that it was a little skinny to be a bear and a lot taller than a bear, a lot longer when it was walking. And so I thought, no, there's no way this is a bear. So I was about 100 yards away, and I put my bow down, and it kind of made a noise when I set it down, and whatever there was, this creature stood up on two legs and looked at me. And right when it stood up, I got my phone out and zoomed in and took a couple pictures. And as soon as I did that, I just kind of sat there and watched, and about 3 seconds later, it turned around and walked off on two legs like a human. And after that, I grabbed my bow and I left. It scared me.
Oh, of course it did. I'm sure it did. Believe me, yeah. Riley, let me tell you something. I've interviewed somewhere around 500-600 people here, and there's not a one that I know of that when you see something that's about 6 foot to 8 foot tall, and it's big, and it's something you've never seen before.
Yeah.
It scares you.
Yeah, I saw it walking behind this fallen tree and bushes that had grown around it, and the tree roots were about 4 feet tall, 4 to 5 feet tall. And when it stood up, it was about twice the size of that, and so I knew it wasn't a bear, and I knew it wasn't a human because there was no humans around me within probably 5 or 10 miles.
Sure. Well, can I ask you a couple of questions? What
yeah,
color?
Sure.
What was it a kind of a long, stringy furry, or could you tell anything by it?
You know, it was kind of long, stringy fur. It was a real dark, dark brown, almost black color when I saw it, and it was probably about 8 foot tall.
Okay. Was there any? Could you indicate any features, or could you? I know it's 100 yards. It's a little bit long, but could you see any kind of features on this thing?
What did the head
and the shoulders look like?
Yeah, the shoulders were really broad and thick. When it turned to where it was like sideways to me, his shoulders were really thick, and its
like
head
a football
was,
player.
Yeah, like somebody in football pads, yeah. And the head was like a human head, but it was bigger.
Right.
It was covered in hair, everything was covered in hair, and its legs weren't super long, but they were longer than a bear, and its arms were really long, hung down to past its waist, I mean.
Yeah. Yep, and I think what you saw, we've got a few videos and pictures of this thing. They do knuckle walk, similar to like chimps and gorillas and things. However, they're not a chimp or a gorilla because of the way their feet are. Now, did you go anywhere near where it was at?
No,
after it
I
went
didn't.
Away?
After it went away, I went away.
No, that's okay.
But,
I understand totally.
I was telling all my friends at school about it, and they're like, "Hey, why didn't you go up there and go look for tracks or something?" And you know,
did you
I
have
didn't
a
even
problem need... with them believing you?
Yeah, I did, man. They don't believe me at all. I mean, that's kind of why I went this far into depth with it. Like, took these measures to get on the show and everything because they weren't believing my story.
Yeah, and don't feel bad because that happens to all of us.
Yeah, so I thought maybe getting on the show, getting on to this stuff, and taking these measures, maybe my friends would believe me about it. And,
sure.
You know.
Oh, absolutely. And Riley, don't take it personally because, truthfully, when we first started out to go out and look for these creatures, our goal wasn't to find a creature. Our goal was to unmask the the fraud until we come face to face with one. And of course, it's pretty difficult to unmask it when it's real.
Yeah, I mean, I've always believed that there is Bigfoots out there. I mean, I watch all the TV shows about it, and me and my dad, we believe in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the things that you might, now that you, you know, once you see these things, some people just want to stay away from it and never see it again. Other people get bitten by the Bigfoot bug and they get curious and they want to find out more about them. And, but one of the things, you can look around and you'll see they have what they call tree twists. And what a tree twist is, it's about a 2-inch, 1.5-inch branch, about 6 to 8 feet off the ground on a tree, just twisted. And it'll be twisted, you know, the only thing that can do that is either, now a human can't do it because we're just not strong enough, but it has to have something that has a human hand to be able to do that. A bear can't do that, obviously, with his mouth or his paws. So it's kind of a neat thing. Another thing is they have what they call tree formations, rock formations, and they also have what we call lairs. And they have hunting lairs, and they have lairs where they may, you know, lie down or bed down. They're usually nocturnal, which means anywhere from about 10 o'clock to 4 in the morning is when their normal time is. But that doesn't mean they don't come out during the day. we believe that they, you know, they travel around in family pods and that they have sentries during the day to kind of keep an eye on things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're very curious. So it's the other thing that we've found, and I just wish we knew more about them, but there are several different species of this thing, and why we can say that is we have DNA on at least four different kinds of creature, and one is human, ancient human, not a normal human, ancient human, about 15,000 years or more. Two others, one is two genomes from being human, and the other is three genomes from being human. They're all different DNA. They're, you know, kind of like, you know, the Cro-Magnon man, you know, they're not human, but they're the bipedal type,
yeah,
you know, before the human, and
yeah,
very similar to that. And what makes them set them aside is what we've been able to do is the creatures will go up in the trees. They will crawl up in the trees and shake the trees like heck. They'll come back down. Their feet are like human, not like an ape. You know, as you know, an ape looks like a hand, sideways hand, right?
Yeah.
You know, chimps, gorillas, most monkeys, they're different kind of feet. Well, these creatures have human feet, and it's amazing the differences and the similarities that they have. We found also that by different reports that some are closer human looking. In other words, they're more human looking than others. And then there's some that are more kind of, it's not ape, it's orangutan looking face. You know, kind of a large face like that, right? Flat.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a gorilla has a snout and a chimp has a kind of a, you know, round snout, but an orangutan has kind of like a round, flat face. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yep, I do.
At that time. So there are different creatures that we've stumbled across.
Yeah, I don't know if this sounds weird, but when it stood up and looked in my direction, its head almost looked like a werewolf's head.
Oh, well, what you saw, that's another species that I didn't bring up. And what that is when we've had a lot of sightings of that as well. And what that is a dog-faced creature. And it has a snout, it has teeth and fangs, and it's a little thinner than a normal, it's a little thinner than the great big ones. You know what I'm talking about?
Thinner body?
Yeah, a little thinner body than the big ones, but it wasn't 2 feet.
When you look at the picture, you'll notice that it's a lot thinner body than, like, that's normal Sasquatch picture.
In fact, I sent you some links. If you take a look at those links, you're going to see exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay.
The creature out of the Seven Chutes in Canada was carrying a dead dog, and it has. You look at it, and it has a snout just like a dog. Now, you know, some people say werewolf and all that. The Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin has been there for 40 or 50 years. There's a lady that lives out there. She's an author, a very good author, Linda Godfrey. And she's written several books on it, and she's done research for the past 20 years on it. And that's a creature that's been going around their area there for at least 40, 50 years. That is exactly what you just described. So, we've had sightings of it in the past couple of years, West Virginia, Minnesota, Wisconsin again, Canada, Mississippi, all over, I mean, a lot. So it's a significant, pretty neat thing.
Yeah. Up in Idaho, we don't have, like, very large bears, black bears. And so when I was showing my friends, they were all thinking, oh, it's just a bear standing up, you know.
Right.
And I was by myself. Of course, I'm by myself when I see something, so nobody believes it.
Sure.
But, when
well, you know what you saw. And
yeah,
you
I know what
you, and you know what a bear looks like.
Yeah, of course. I hunt quite a bit. And
yeah.
So I was pointing out all the different features that a bear has from what this has. And they thought it was a bear. I'm like, no, it's not a bear because we don't have bears that tall in our area.
Right.
And so.
Oh, I understand totally, Riley. I understand totally. I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
But what I'd like to ask you is hang around till the end of the show. We're
yep,
going to have about a 10 or 15 minute period where we're going to have open discussion, and you can ask questions. There may be some people wanting to ask you questions about your sighting, and we share that way, and it kind of opens opens things up a little bit.
Okay, yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
Okay, I'm just going to mute you out. You can still listen to the rest of the show here. And then
okay,
when I get down towards the end, I'll unmute everybody, okay?
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Riley. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Riley from Idaho, and he's been doing pretty good, I tell you what. Next, we're going to go out here to our good friend Anthony from Virginia. Anthony, how are you?
Doing all right, Malcolm Bill. Hope everybody's doing well.
Anthony, thank you for sending me the... You made a cast of some prints.
Yes.
Thank you for sending them to me. I couldn't get them up in time.
Okay.
I spent most of the day into the doctor's office, so I didn't have enough time to load them up and put them on. But we'll get them up there with your slideshow.
Okay.
Tell us what's going on, Anthony.
Well, happened to have another occasion going out with East Coast Jack. And,
super. How's he doing?
And he's doing good. He's got a pretty decent work schedule that allows him to, get a full day, full amount of hours in, I should say. And it still gives him some free time to do some creature research. On one of his days off and having some extra time, spent some time in an area that we were talking about, and turned out to be pretty eventful. So the thing is that, you know, he has trouble with his hearing, so he really enjoys the sounds by having a parabolic dish.
Right.
And so during the night, you know, he's able to hear, you know, and if you remember in the past shows, you know, that he would always make those calls. You know, he would call
right.
back to him. And so, you know, he's very good at making the calls and successful. But he said that there was so much stuff going on, that I guess, he didn't have enough space on his recorder. But what he also noticed was that there was a, what was it? He noticed that when the creatures were kind of close, he said there was something kind of funny. He said it was sounding like deer snorts. And, but, you know, usually when, you know, a deer is snorting, it's not snorting and running at the same time, you know. He said the snorts were not stationary. You know, it's not like he could pinpoint,
right.
you know, saying that, oh, there they are, or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he definitely can tell that it was on the move. And so it kind of made him suspicious because the latter deer snorts were kind of like at a higher pitch. You know, it didn't sound exactly the same. And so he said, you know, even though there was a period of time where it seemed like they were not responding. He says one of the good things about having that parabolic microphone was that he was able to hear them walking. So that part they couldn't, you know, even though people say that, you know, I mean, it's true, you know, they glide through the woods, you know, you don't hear much unless they, you know, accidentally step on something, you know. But as they were walking through the grass and all that, he was able to hear them walking, so he knew that they were close. And he said that the walking sound was so loud that he, you know, turned on his light, but he couldn't see. And, you know, so he had that feeling that they were there, and but he just couldn't see them. But
right.
He was, I couldn't stay out with him all night, so, you know, because I had to go to work. He stayed, and I went back. He told me what had happened, so I had went back to that area the next day, and that footprint is what I found. You know, the pictures of that cast that I sent you is what I told him. And interestingly enough, that cast is, I told him, there were actually three footprints there. You know, I only had time for one because the sun's going down. And I guess when I get better, maybe I'll get faster at this. But, you know, I measured the distance from that first footprint that I found to where he was. All three footprints were in the same area. And it was approximately about 30 short paces, you know, I walked, you know. So, so I told him, I said, you know, when you thought they were close, I said, this is how close they were. I said, they could watch you. You know, they you know, if what you were hearing was true and all the timing was right, you know. and I can truthfully testify that exact spot where we saw the print, there was no footprint there the day before. Both Dave and I were at that exact spot. You know, because we were walking all around trying to set up somewhere, and then we're like, well, let's try here, let's try there, let's try there. You know, so that particular spot where we saw that footprint, we were there the day before, and there was no footprint there. As a matter of fact, what we did find was, prints of other animals, you know, turkey, you know, raccoon, coyote, you know, but we didn't, you know, there was no, you know, human-like footprint there, but you know, when he told me that, that's what made me go back there, and sure enough, that's what was there. So,
super.
Thankfully,
well, you had a pretty eventful time.
Yeah, but I didn't know. Did you get to see something else in that print that might be sticking out there?
I didn't get a chance. Like I said, I'd been to the doctor's office most of the day, and when I got it from you there, I was late. Coming back, setting up for the show. And what I did is I did take a look at it, but not a close look.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, to me it looks like, and, you know, and I've sent it to a few others, you know, that are having, you know, similar folks in the area that have the same belief that we do. You know, without me saying anything, they could, you know, see what I see. What it looks like, that there is a smaller footprint that's
on the inside.
On the inside of that, yeah. So
pretty neat.
And, you know, it is pretty neat, you know. I mean, that's what I think it is. The only headache is that if I knew about that footprint earlier, you know, I probably would have, you know, casted it earlier. Unfortunately, you know, it did rain throughout the day, and I went there after work. You know, so I was not able to, you know, so, you know, when rain, and, you know, and the thing was in mud, too, you know, so.
Oh, I understand. I understand, yeah, all that, man. Believe me, nothing ever goes the way you want it to when you're trying to do something.
Yeah, but I'm glad I did it anyway, because, I mean,
yeah,
not just me. I really think that there's, you know, a smaller print inside of a bigger print there, you know.
So, yeah. Well, I'm going to take a closer look at it.
But, yeah, and if I'm wrong, that's okay. I mean, even if I'm wrong on that part, you know, at least there's still
I've looked at the footprint, and you got one last week, the week before last also. So, pretty good. You're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I'm trying. I know it's not enough evidence for a lot of folks, but...
I don't know. Yeah. You got two footprint casts in, what, 3 weeks? Yeah. That's not bad.
One of them had a piece of hair stuck in it. One has a hair sticking out. The other one has a second footprint. You know, in it,
yep, so. I've seen the hair on it. I've seen the hair on the one cast you had. Pretty cool.
Yeah, but it was a good...
Well, gosh, thank you much for coming on tonight.
Sure.
We're going to go on to Richard here in Sweden, and then we'll go to our little free-for-all at the end here.
All right, sounds good.
I'll keep in touch with you. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Mark and Bill.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Anthony from Virginia. But now we're going to go out here to Richard from New York. Richard, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Bill. I'm sorry to hear you were sick.
Nah, it's not really sick. It's what it is. They don't have a medication I need in order to take the water out of my body. It's a diuretic. And it's... When you got too much water in your body, you can't do anything.
Right.
I got about 100 pounds of water that I don't need.
Well, Bill, what I wanted to go into tonight is, as you know, I go over everything I take photos and video of. And people keep on talking about the dog man. Now, from In my area, what I'm seeing, I actually have a photo. I don't think I've ever sent it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Of an upright, something upright with a looks like a fox standing upright. And I have another photo. I couldn't send you this one because it's not clear enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's of a hominid face with a fox skin over its head, laying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not clear enough, but I know what it is, and I have the very first photo I think I've ever sent to you and Tom.
Yeah.
Is of a small gray creature on the side of the trail, like ducking in the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Tom both commented on it, but the more I look at it, that's not what it is. It's something with a gray skin over it. I think what I'm dealing with here, and they may be mixed because you have the one photo that looks like the typical Bigfoot that you guys have. I think I have the more hominid type here. And
very well can be.
And they're wearing...
Well, when I talk about several different species, I'm not saying that they're all together.
Well, I think
these are reports that I get from various different places.
I know that, but I may
and I get 10 to 12, you know, phone calls on the hotline a week.
Right.
And as we go through those, people report what they saw. And when they report what they saw, first they say, "Well, it doesn't even seem feasible, but it had a snout on it."
But Bill, my very first sighting I had here was a man-sized gray creature going across the trail 25 yards up on all fours.
Well, knuckle walking is very common with these things too.
But
I've got all kinds of videos, all kinds of stuff with knuckle walking from all of them.
The video you pointed out, the one going up the tree, that might even be more of like a chimp. The way it was sitting up there rocking and chattering away.
There's actually two of them up there.
Well, whatever. But the ones I'm seeing, and I'm thinking, that's what these people keep on saying. They're seeing upright dog men walking around. That they might...
Well, the one that I'm talking about is pretty self-evident.
Well,
if you go up on the web and you look up...
I'll send you...
You look it up, it's pretty... I mean, you can see it. It's pretty clear.
I'll send you the photo I have, and you can see the snout. And I don't know of foxes that stand upright. Yeah, red foxes. And it's not exactly clear, but you know damn well what it is because you can see the snout and the ears and stuff.
Well, the picture I'm talking about, the thing is standing up. It's carrying a dead dog.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a one of those little, what do they call them?
Lap dog?
No. God, Well, I just had a senior moment.
Plug because we had three.
But a little cocker spaniel.
Right.
And it's pretty evident that it's what it is. I've got as well.
Go ahead. Listen, none of us know exactly what we're dealing with.
Well, no, we know we're dealing with several different species because we know the DNA is different on each one.
But
I mean, that's given.
Well,
I mean, that's why, Richard, if you got different DNA, you got a different creature.
Yeah, Bill, I said to Steve, I was telling him how I heard the two conversing back and forth.
Yeah.
That was intelligent beings conversing back and forth. That was
had a lot of that.
That wasn't two dumb animals just making noises. They were conversing back and forth in a language.
Richard, we know that. I have many, many instances.
And
where
I was
these creatures have been talking back and forth. I mean, we
I
know they have a language.
I was lucky to hear that, Bill. Yeah,
huh?
How lucky I am. I consider myself one of the luckiest people in the world.
Yeah.
To hear that.
I mean, we got, my gosh, what, 5-6 years ago, I mean, I had 10 different people in various areas that had heard them conversing in their own language. I mean, they have their own language.
Yeah, I told Tom, and you know what? Tom said, did it sound like this? And he was pretty damn close. Believe me. He was pretty damn close.
So, I mean,
it sounds like
what I'm trying to explain to you, Richard, what I'm trying to explain to you is we're not in question about them conversing or being able to converse or having a language. Well, there's no question. We know that they have something to do. I mean, they communicate with each other, obviously. They also have monkey chatter that they use to do it.
How close
and they use that too.
Bill, how close do you think that the hominid type that you're talking about, how close do you think they are to being almost aboriginal?
Well, all I can tell you, Richard, is the DNA that we have says it's 15,000 years old. Okay? It's angelic human. Okay? Angelic human means ancient human.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's what when you do DNA, you do DNA two different ways. The first way is, the first way is real easy. It's to find the mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to the mitochondrial DNA and go down into the 16 billion pairing and all the other crap that they do, that takes several months or more to do it, and that tracks the father down.
Well, you know,
and if you've watched any of the science, any of the NOVA or science fields or anything else on TV, they bring the human species they even think it's mixed now with some of the other hominids. Okay?
That's why I believe in evolution. Because just what
we're
doing.
Well, not necessarily evolution. Evolution, what I'm saying is that they had crossbred to different species. Okay? Our species survived because of certain attributes that we have. Right?
Exactly.
You know, that kind of thing. But it goes all, it used to be, everybody, science said it was only, everything went back to Pangea, Africa, blah, 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 to Pangea and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they've found where it's stopped in China. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's several different things being investigated in the past, several years. Where they're trying to define that.
Well, let's
but, I mean, those
it,
are things.
Yeah, let's face it. If they were just primates, they would have been caught by now. They would have been caught, tagged, and released by now.
Well, there's a lot of things out there that we don't
smart.
Know and that we haven't found yet. I mean, we're finding new stuff every day. In the oceans, my God, I mean, so many different things that we don't know. I mean, we know less about the ocean than we do about the moon.
Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely
so,
right.
So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things, and it all depends on who's working on what and where the funding comes from.
Look,
and, you know, who's doing what.
There's no cougars in New York State, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no cougars in New York State. There was one killed in Connecticut that they had tagged and released up in the Adirondacks. They checked the DNA. It was the same cougar.
Sure.
I mean, that's our environmental department in New York State. They say there's
mm-hmm.
no Sasquatch.
Well,
yeah.
The only reason I'm bringing it up is there's no question about communications or other things. We don't know what it is, and we can't justify it. I mean, we just don't know what it is. But we know that they do, and it would be, why wouldn't they be able to communicate?
No, they're intelligent, of course.
Well, all animals communicate. That's what I'm trying to say. It's
not
just the creature. I mean, every single species of animal we have communicates. Dolphins communicate.
Right.
They're not human. I mean,
not like this, Bill. Not like what I heard. Not like what I heard. It was actually intelligent conversation. And it sounded like a cross between Japanese and a Native American to me.
No, I understand.
Like.
I mean, we've heard that before. In fact, you can go on the internet, you can hear it, sound files on it.
Yeah, well, that's what I've heard. And
yeah.
That's what you guys heard?
No, other people have heard it too. So what I'm trying to say is it's not that nobody believes it. I'm sure they do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're not the only. Just you've heard some of this, right?
Yeah, I
know.
That's
pretty. That's pretty neat.
I'm not. It's not unique to me. Believe me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Everything.
But I mean, other people have also heard it and published it, and you know, science is not going to catch up with us for another. I don't know how long.
Everything people talk about on this show is not just unique to us. People are hearing and seeing and experience these things all over the country.
Well,
probably most of the world.
Think about it. I get 10, 15 calls a week on a hotline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I used to think that they were
how many people do you think don't call?
Oh, that's all. You're getting maybe 1%, Bill. If that.
I'm not even getting 1%.
I used to think that it was just one or two creatures running around the woods. No, there's thousands of them. There's got to be.
Yeah.
And there's thousands of each one.
I mean, there's too many sightings. I mean, my God, these things are, and they're not all way out in the no man's land and where you can't find anything or anything. I mean, they're right down right next to inhabited areas.
I think
where people are living.
And the only reason we're seeing them is we're more conscious of them. We're looking.
Well, you can be more aware of what's going on.
Yeah, we're more aware. If you're not aware, they can be.
They've always been there, probably, and you just never paid attention.
There was a mountain lion making kills in California right next to a housing development. Nobody knew it was there. It was killing deer in a little patch of woods.
Yeah.
Nobody knew it was there. They found the deer kills.
Hmm.
So we're just more aware. We're looking. If people looked, I think there'd be even more sightings.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there would be.
People are just oblivious to what's going on around them.
I'll tell you what, let's go off on to Swede. Swede has something he wants to talk about. We'll get into our main discussion, and you can open it up. How's that?
Right. Okay, Bill.
Thanks, Richard, for coming
on.
You're
welcome. You're welcome, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Richard from New York. We're going to go out here to Swede. Hey, Swede. Rocky didn't make it tonight.
No,
he
didn't.
Family commitments.
He's got family coming in, and he said that he was going to have to spend a little time in the loading room and make sure nobody got out of hand.
That's right.
So, anyway, he said he'd be back with us next week and tell everybody hi and all of that. And I'm just going to get right on to it. I had a little opportunity with a young man that works on the farm sometimes part time, and he was wanting to go do some turkey hunting. He said he had some turkey stuff, so I took a little time and went, and I told him I'd go do some calling for him and see if I could bring something up for him anyway. On the ride over there, he was bragging to me about his new boots, and you'll get the point here in just a minute. I want to talk about some footwear. He had some boots that he had picked up, and they had kind of an overmolded top of a rubber sole. I know that y'all are familiar with that, like a leather with a glued-on sole, kind of like the boots sitting down in a boot sort of type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, not, you know, just a pretty good-looking boot, but I kept thinking to myself, I thought, well, that's all right, I guess. Anyway, he was asking me about how come I was wearing my, how come I didn't go get some different boots? Why was I wearing them old black Army Surplus Vietnam era jungle boots? I said, well, they're nice and cool, and they got a real hard sole with a steel shank, and if I step on something, it won't go through the bottom of it. Well, we went out and did our thing there, and the young man was actually kind of successful on the first there, just after first light there, called in a pretty nice tom. This happened to be, we were close to the roost. We didn't even know it. I'd never been there before. But anyway, he was pretty successful. And anyway, we went back up. We were going back up to the vehicles there, and some of his kin folks there and close family was there, and they was all taking photographs and this and that and the other. And said, well, said, we still got lots of time. You know, you want to go see if you can double up. So he said, yeah, let's go. So anyway, when on the way out there, I had noticed there was a little draw on the fence line. It looked like a pretty good spot. And I said, why don't you go over there and sit down on that fence line over there, and then I'll get over here behind you up on this rock wall, and I'll do a little call and see if something come off alongside that. There's a big field there. Nice spot, Bill. Anyhow, boy, directly I heard a big holler. And I thought, oh, boy, what'd he do now? So I went down there, and he was all hobbled up there holding that foot up, and he had stepped off on a honey locust tree. He's got some big old thorns that are about 2 or 3 or 4 inches long at times. And he run that right up through the bottom of that boot, and it went come up right out of the top of his foot.
Ouch!
through that boot. And I tell you, it wasn't, he wasn't happy about it, and he wasn't any more happier when I jerked that thing out of there than he was when he stepped on it. And anyway, his little second round of turkey hunting kind of got cut short, and he had to go to the doctors, and he's doing fine. They had to take the gun cleaning rod and run it through that hole through his foot there, and got all the stuff out of it and this and that, and got him all fixed up. But anyway, he was we got back up there to the truck, and during the excitement his father said, dude, look at your shoe. And I had one of the same thorns there right from where he was at, but it didn't go through my boot. It was just stuck in there a little ways and broke off, but he saw it. And anyway, I got to thinking about that, and I was thinking about the expeditions and so forth. And, of course, you know me and Rocky, we always try to get the best we can get. You know, you can go down to your local Cabela's, I'm not pitching names, but you know what I mean, sporting good stores, and get something. And I was just going to, you know, there's a lot of good cold weather winter boots that you can get that's got all kinds of Thinsulate and, you know, Gore-Tex lining and so forth and so on. And you can kind of get away in the wintertime with some of that with a little less sole, not less traction, but a little less like a more of an air bob or something air-filled where you've got some insulation with air. But when it comes to summertime tracking or getting out in the woods and stuff like that, you know, it's not the first time that's happened, and it probably won't be the last. And I don't know if you're anywhere around, any listeners out there around in that type of situation where you have that. You might be somewhere where you don't know. It's worth it to have a pair of boots that's got a good Vibram sole or some kind of a good steel shank and a Goodyear welt, something a little bit more substantial to save you some grief. And
absolutely.
Because that just ruins your day to have a big thorn stuck right through the top of your foot. Just ruins your whole day.
Yeah,
but anyway, I thought I would bring that up a little bit, and I'll jump off that. I was going to switch gears just a bit there. I was listening to Anthony about his casting, and I was just going to tell him right quick that something, you know, I know he had that one break and hair come out of it, which was probably a good thing that that happened. But I was going to say, in my little kit that we carry, me and Rocky carry around there, I carry popsicle sticks from the kids, you know, all the popsicle sticks left over. I got probably about 20 of them wrapped up with a rubber band. And when we find something like that, when we go to cast, we'll build a little, like a little little wall around it with those popsicle sticks. Don't have to be pretty. And then stick some in there like stakes, you know, to hold it up, to reinforce it. And gives you a little bit more depth in your cast. Keeps your casting material all right there. And then, of course, in my business, we go through ink pens like nothing. And them old big ink pens that run out. Well, I kept them. I keep them, and when I go to do a casting like that, I'll pour some in the bottom and get my cast about halfway full, and I'll lay a couple of them in there like rebar, you know, to reinforce the cast and pour some more material on top of it, and it makes it super strong to keep it from snapping or breaking. And I thought I'd just pass that along to Anthony. It's a pretty good little trick. Makes your cast a lot heavier and less apt to... You don't have to use so much material because you got it all dammed up around there. You don't have to worry about it just running out all over the place. And seems to work pretty good. It's a good little trick. We use it quite a bit for all kinds of, you know, casting.
Super. Well, you want to open it up for everybody?
Sure, sure.
Okay, you've got Steve from New York is on. Swede is on. Riley from Idaho is on. Richard from New York is on. Anthony from Virginia is on. Snake Man, you're on.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Lee.
You bet, Anthony.
Yeah, next week, hopefully, Marco Bill had the time to put those pictures up. I didn't do what you suggested, but I did something similar. I just took that, you know, smelly mud from the creek, and I just piled it around, you know, to... you know, just around where the foot was, and then I poured in the mix, you know. But
right.
But that is a good idea to you know, to have.
So when you pull that cast out, Anthony, and you turn it over, it looks like it's overlaid on a block or something, you know, and it really is effective to see the look of the print too, you know, and it just reinforces it where you can deal with it without it breaking. You may use just a tad bit more material, but you know, when maybe a once-in-a-lifetime cast, and you want it to be a good one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think this one, although it wasn't, perfectly defined, but I think once you get a look at it, you know, as a matter of fact, if Marco Bill shoots me your email address, I'll email it to you tonight or tomorrow, and you can see it looks like, you know, Right at the ball of the foot, it looks like there's a smaller footprint right there, you know?
Wow.
Kind of in that shape, you know, and it's, like I said, it's really interesting to look at. And I've been testing it on folks, you know, some other guys doing the same thing, just letting them look at it and just say, what do you see? And, you know, without me telling them anything, they see what I see, you know? So...
Well, I'm kind of like Marco, you know, you say you didn't have much going on, but, you know, I haven't been doing it for all that long, I guess a few years now, and I've seen probably, I don't know, maybe 10 tracks, and at one time, I was about 6 of them at one time, so you don't run across them that often, but, you know, when you do, you know, it's pretty cool, and it's usually it's far and few between them sounds like you found a really good spot to just hang in there, you know, that not every day. Something doesn't happen every day. Most of the time not for me because we have commitments and we can't get out there and do it. Sounds like your job kind of gets you sometimes where you can get out and maybe see a little bit of stuff because you're out in the rural areas there. You see some spots that are hot and, you know, don't give up and stick with it. And that's awesome. You know, just stick with it, Anthony. You know, you've been doing it long enough. You know what you're looking for and don't ever get down on yourself because the next one may be the one, you know?
Yeah, maybe so.
Hey, Mark, does anybody have any questions for Riley or Steve?
I wanted to ask Riley if he had, well, of course, like I always do, how did you get any sniffing going on? Did you smell anything, Riley?
No, I didn't.
Well, I was just curious. I know that it was a pretty good distance, but I didn't know if you'd may have caught a whiff. You know, most of the time you get an experience like that, you're generally downwind, and because they'll smell you before you smell them. But if you're up, if you're downwind, you can you might have caught something. I was just curious because everybody's got a little different take on the smell and where you're at. It may be a whole different type of a smell than what we've experienced in Arkansas.
Yeah, no, I didn't smell anything. I mean, yeah.
Well, it was good to hear your encounter.
Well, thanks.
It sounded like it was pretty excitable, and there's nothing wrong with leaving the scene to hunt again another day. You know, you never know what might happen, especially if all you've got in your hand is a bow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, how about if you got nothing in your hand but a camera?
Well, Richard, you know, we've talked about that. You're going to have to get you a swamper. You're going to have to get you a running buddy, somebody that can come and help you out.
I think Steve and I have been conversing. I think we're going to start doing some stuff together.
That sounds good, Richard. That would be really good. I hope that you get some. I always think about you being out there by yourself and with nothing, and it'd be nice to have somebody to have your back. I'm real fortunate I've got
my good
friend Rocky to be with me, and
I would do a lot better job of it, Swede. If I had, I would take a lot more time out there by myself. It's like I'm running a race when I'm out there.
That's what you said.
Hey, how much rain did you guys get?
I'm sorry?
Storm? Did you guys get hit with that storm in Arkansas?
Just south of us. I was working with some people today to send down some stuff for some of the victims. There was just a little bit south of us there. North of Little Rock, it's probably 150 miles from us. And it was tremendous damage. My grandson is down there working for a utility company, helping to restore power, and he said it's flat as a pancake. And then lots of people, they actually found someone that was killed in the storm and in the recovery kind of a mode. But yeah, it was pretty bad news.
It came by us here.
But it never did develop until after it had went past. It had already moved east before it started dropping down, the big tornadoes. We had hail cover the ground, a couple of inches deep. It looked like it had snowed. It hailed so hard. And the wind blowed a few big trees down and removed some roofing and stuff like that, but no one was injured.
Yeah, I was going out today, and it was raining very hard here today, and I just didn't dare go out on those muddy trails by myself, you know. I'm afraid I'll fall.
You might get stuck.
I might get stuck, okay. I'm a big fella.
Get them big
boots
on. Big boots on, Richard, where you get some traction.
We have roots here. You know, we have so many trees. We have roots that are above the ground, and that's the biggest danger right there. It's going to trip over one of those.
Yeah, not a good thing to be tripping and falling.
No.
Hey, Michael, I had a question.
Sure.
I heard Richard talking about, you know, the dog face Bigfoot, or the Bigfoot with the dog on its shoulder, or chin of a dog. Have you ever thought that the differences that we see in Bigfoot could be either Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal relations?
Well, no, there are. That's what we're saying. We haven't gotten any DNA on a Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal, but that's what we liken these creatures to. The non-human ones are very similar to Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal. And it's probably that thing, yeah. That's the dog-faced ones are kind of a newer, when I say newer, the last few years, times past until we actually did an expedition to Wisconsin and met with Linda Godfrey and a few other people over there. And, of course, it was on, you know, news and all kinds of stuff. We've had several people that we had interviewed that had had an encounter with this. They were national news. And they made the headlines and everything. But, you know, when we looked at that, I mean, we couldn't believe it ourselves. But as we went and investigated it and got more reports on it, we started getting more and more reports on a similar type creature. And the description of the creature was exactly the same as it was from there.
What got me to ask that, though, Marco, is he was talking about if it had a dog or dog skin laying across its shoulder or head.
Head.
That would be like clothing. I mean, I forget which it was.
Richard has some pictures that he thought maybe they were wearing animal skins or other things, type of thing, or even clothes, you know, on some of the pictures that he's seen. But that's not a dog-faced Bigfoot. I mean, when we say dog-faced Bigfoot, I'm talking no kidding.
Yeah.
Really, no kidding, a dog face. It's about 6 foot tall. It's not 8 or 9 foot. It's about 6 or 7 foot tall. It's skinnier than a. It's a little thinner than a normal, than a big Bigfoot, right?
Right.
And it walks on 2 feet, and it runs like hell on 2 feet too.
here's another thing, Marco. Most of what I've seen, the flesh part of the face, is anywhere from a dark tan to almost a dark gray to almost a black, but I think I've seen a couple with white, and I don't think that's their skin color. I think they put something on their face, dust or something.
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, it's so hard. I mean, we can't even get a good description of a face.
Yeah,
I mean, nobody's gotten that close to be able to do that.
Saying, the orangutan face? The flat face?
Yeah, well, more orangutan looking.
Right,
I'm not saying an orangutan. I'm saying
right
if you had to compare
that.
It.
You're
I'm
right
saying
on
if you,
that.
Right. I also had an update for y'all on Paris, Texas. We have had some activities. There is a team out here this weekend that's been here for a couple of days so far, and they've already had rocks thrown and logs thrown. Same place where searching for Bigfoot has been.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a couple of hot spots down there, right, Snake Man?
Yes, there is. And I'm going out as soon as I can to investigate and see what's going on and kind of poke around.
Mm-hmm.
And
super, buddy.
Isn't that Swampy Snake Man?
Yes, it is. Hey, I'm right at home, man. I'm right at home.
Is Dave Quicksand?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. You want to hear what it's like, Marco? What was the description that they gave for
Jurassic Park? 8 lots of clams. They were eating lots of clams. There's lots of clams dug up around the swamp area.
Yep. That's right. And this is the same area, Marco, where they had spotted the creature in the water. Remember I told you about the three boats at the end of last summer?
Right.
It's the same exact area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Well, as you remember, we were on a show one night, and we had that cell phone transmitter on the top of the truck, because we, you know, had to have some extra power, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's huddled around the truck, and right across on the island, right there, one of them started acting up and bellowing and hollering, and right while we were on the show. It was pretty neat.
I'll never forget that. They made me, since it's my area, go after the other crew that was stuck out in the middle of nowhere. That was fun. But I figured I would give you all the FYI on what is going on, and it is a well-known group. I'll give you that much. Marco, if you call me later, I'll give you the name.
Sure.
All right. Mm-hmm. You can give me a holler. But I just wanted to bring that to y'all's attention. And for everybody that's out there, this season is picking up with the snakes, so please be careful while you're out hunting.
Will do.
Hey, here's another thing. You know, I saw a Monster Quest guy, and these people were by Vancouver Island on a boat, and they said they put a light on a creature for an hour. Now, from what I can tell, it's not going to stand there for an hour if it's seen, which makes me think they're not telling the truth, because as soon as you see them, they're usually gone. They're not
going to
stand.
There's no way that's possible. There's no way that's possible.
You put a light on. You put a light on one of them for an hour. They're gone. They're not going to stand there. That's why I don't think the Patterson film's true.
I mean, a couple of times.
It's not going to walk and give you a cameo shot of it. It's going to go into the bushes.
Well, that's like finding Bigfoot when you see it on TV. You know, a whole bunch of guys running around with cameras and lights and sound equipment.
They're shooting off rockets.
You're like, oh, my God, that's
great
that could be a creature.
Great for entertainment, but that's not the way it works in the real world.
No. In reality, when you really are out there, it's a little more.
Yeah.
It's a little more.
It's a little bit
different. Right on that, guys, that's not going to stand there and pose for you for an hour on the beach with a light on it?
Mm-hmm. No.
How do you know
that's not what they do. They'll stay there as long as you don't see it. But as soon as it thinks you see it, it's gone. And they can slink away so quiet.
Well, guys, I got to tell you something. I don't know, behavioral-wise, we know enough about them. First of all, several months ago, I had a guy from Florida that was running a rig down there in the swamp, right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys might not remember that, but he was, you know, one of those shoot things. I forget what they call them, but you know, digging out the swamps, right?
Yeah.
And he'd seen.
Dredging.
Yeah, he'd seen about 10 or 15 of them just way down at the end, hanging around, sitting on stumps and around the area there watching. During the daytime and the nighttime, especially at nighttime, when the lights, they had these big lights on, right? And so, I mean, you know, if they don't feel threatened, we don't know, I mean, how they're going to react, I don't think. If they want to be hidden, they can, and if they don't want to, they won't. It's hard to determine, I think, how they're going to react or what they're going to do. It's a difficult thing to do.
You know, like me and Rocky, we always cold camp and we never start a fire. And probably,
right.
And you know, as we sit around in the evening time, you know, getting prepared, or if we get back, you know, from whatever after a little night trip early in the morning or whatever, we're sitting around there in the dark. I've often wondered how many times that while we were sitting there having a conversation that there might have been a creature just you know, right there very close looking right at us and thinking, boy, these guys are a bunch of goobers, you know?
I know.
And what are they doing sitting in the dark like that, you know? But
I know they're not going to steal
your
food.
At the end of the movie on Bigfoot Lives, Mike Sells, he's no longer with us, but he, you know, he's got his camera in night vision and trying to take, you know, he hears this grunting and this motion in the dark, and it's pitch dark and he can't see a thing. And guess what? He runs right into one. And it knocks him ass over tea kettle. I mean, it didn't hit him. It just, when he hit against it, it just reacted the same as he did. It was, you know, and he fell down, and man, I'll tell you, you could see the fear in his face.
Well, but Marco, I think that's probably why that we had have had that, you know, at our little hot spot where we go, like with the cuties getting taken and all.
Absolutely.
You know, we're in the dark, and I think that it was a more of a non-threatening situation.
to where the curiosity was, you know, and the lure of the cutie smell and that fruit bag up in the tree was just too much. And it didn't feel threatened because it was in total darkness and it had the advantage, you know. We weren't trying to light the woods up or nothing, you know. Me and Rocky, we get around just fine with no light. But I think that was the deal, you know. That's why we had the encounter so close. And then the second night, it being coming back, you know, just kind of driven that a little bit harder that, you know, the less amount of unnatural stuff that you do, the more apt you're probably going to have a curiosity type of an encounter, in my opinion, in our neck of the woods. That's truly what's happened is that they're just not threatened because there's not a big blazing fire going, lighting the place up, and you know, they're like looking in there going, like I said, you know, what are these goobers doing?
I know. Not only that, we've had instances where guys are out there with their little campfires all gathered around the campfire cooking weenies and marshmallows.
No, they're trying to figure out what Rocky and Sweet are eating.
No, and it keeps rolling rocks keep getting rolled in, small rocks, rolled in towards the campfire. And so I guess it wasn't pretty aggressive. I mean, if it wanted to, it could hurt them, but it just rolled them in.
You know,
they were going nuts.
Marco, you know, if the creatures are out there close at hand and, you know, we don't see them, although, you know, I'm just speculating on that, you know, and they're probably not, but I'm just saying, if we had that fire going, I'd sure rather be sitting there in the dark, sitting there laughing with my buddy and one come up and thinking that we're a bunch of goobers than one to pick up a big old sand rock like they did down there at the lake and heave it across the way and hit me in the head with it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's just
one of
those
things. You guys
want
to hear something real? Something interesting? You know, I've never smelled anything when I saw them, when I saw the Sasquatches. But get this, when I haven't seen them, I smelled them. How's that? And that happened on several different occasions.
Hey, Squeeze.
Yes, Richard.
Is that true that one of them picked up one of your cook pot and threw it away?
It wasn't the cook pot. It took the cooler, removed the cooler full of fruit out of the tree and took it away.
How high was the cooler up?
About 9 feet, 10 feet, Todd. It was bear-proof.
Did it bend the tree, or did it just reach up and grab it?
No, it grabbed the hold of some 550 paracord and snapped it and pulled it and just broke it. It was tied off with paracord, you know, holding it up there, and it just grabbed the paracord and broke it and then grabbed the cooler and took off.
Wow.
Hey, Mark.
Well, everybody, I want to thank you all for coming on tonight. Thanks for being with us, and thanks for sharing with us. Thanks for being a part of our family. And all our listeners out there, keep the Bigfoot alive and keep Bigfooting. We'll see everybody next week. Take care now, okay? Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Good
night, everybody. Good night, Tom.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. We'll put them together.